over our marriages. Just be as polite as you can to him. Kill him with kindness. And
turn it up.
Chairman.
Yeah, how do we do it?
Just press
play. Yeah, I'll do it. Okay, we'll let you know when we want to. Did she say anything about acting on them?
She said we have 2 pages of amendments. Some of them are extensive. I haven't seen them. They're really from the Liminal office.
But I thought she made reference to what was going to happen with the amendments. I couldn't hear it all. But
this bill scheduled all
week. Starting statistics that they put together on dropouts in our ability to fulfill the increasing problems. I know of 23 dropouts in the history of our current high school. 19 of these have dropped out in the last 8 years. 4 of these
I was
Department family that continue bearing to be the welfare. One elementary family has produced 5 dropouts in a row and has a third grader that openly states that it is her goal also. Numerous comments have been made to me from the students and community members about the SDCC file.
For invitations.
I was thinking for your business purpose.
Oh, this is my business, too.
Okay, it's the other way.
Could be a priority. Right now, the students' work ethic is so poor that I see teachers, myself included, decreasing standards instead of increasing them. Just to hold on to the students that we have. This is especially true at the high school level.
He's talking about how all the village youth have lost their work ethic because all their role models get public assistance. So if we got rid of public assistance, then the village kids would have a work ethic. Ask me why I'm sitting at the table if I don't plan to testify.
Who do?
The staff.
It's
fine. I'm not wearing my power suit today. Recognition.
Okay, I'll give you 2 more minutes and then we'll take testimony from others. Thank you, Mary. Go ahead.
Okay, thank
Did you ask Portia who's attending the meeting in Anchorage? Did she say?
Would you push it on and just let me ask? Madam Chairman, this is Senator Salo in Juneau. Can you hear me? Thank you. Can you tell us who's present there? And can you tell us a little bit more about your intentions for what's going to happen during today's meeting? Madam Chair, are the other members of the committee in Anchorage?
Senator Lehman is here, and Senator Phillips came by, but as you know, he is not a member of the committee. Senator Miller is not here.
So you're not planning to take any committee action today, simply testimony, is that correct? Well, Madam Chairman, I'm very pleased to hear the testimony of the people who have come to the LIO and those on teleconference, but I am concerned about a work session, and I don't know exactly what your intentions are or what you mean there, but Senator Ellis and I certainly want to participate in that, and we have no copies of the amendments that you earlier mentioned. That's just fine. I was simply concerned about the work session portion of it.
Madam Chair, this is Senator Ellis in Juneau. I want to make it part of the committee record that I would have planned to attend the meeting if I had known and received notice from your office in time to make those arrangements. I really would request that if you plan to do this again, and these kinds of public forums are very positive, and I support that. But if you plan to do it again, I would hope that you would notice the minority so that we can make arrangements to fully participate in the hearing. I hope it was an oversight, but we really did not receive notice in time to do this. And it sounds like, you know, it seems like you've well prepared the committee hearing, but maybe you forgot to notify us early on. And I would hate for the people in Anchorage, my community, to think that I didn't care enough to show up there in person. That would have been possible if I'd had adequate notice.
Thank you. The next person to
Yeah, but I cut her no slack. She has Portia Babcock there whispering every instruction in her ear. She knows exactly what she's doing. And her plain dumb isn't going to cut it. I don't care.
I know, but...
Yeah. No, thank you for the warning. Yeah.
Oh, I agree. I'm just concerned that she's not going to realize that she can't amend this bill up there with two members of the committee.
I think she knows that.
I don't know. Sort of the Darth Vader approach to welfare.
Last year, I tried to get up after my daughter was enrolled. And get some services that she needed. And then through the school district, I figured I could go off welfare. What's the problem? Daycare assistance was not available. And they put my name on a waiting list. Employers want you to go to work tomorrow, not next week or next month. Extended Medicaid for 2 to 3 years, especially for kids and parents who have ongoing health problems. To say no, then you're cut off of welfare for 3 to 5 years, just isn't going to do it. If Kristen might have applied for AFCC, if they would have told me I needed to go get my GED, then I would have been right now, probably on welfare. I think anybody who doesn't have an Ohio school diploma or a GED should be in the 34. I've also found out I need to still go back to work to support my 3 girls. I tried to get into several programs and wasn't able to because of daycare. Bootstraps program wouldn't help me because I didn't have daycare. Daycare assistance wouldn't help me because I wasn't doing all the new programs. I tried to get off welfare. And it thankfully was able. I was finally able to get into the jobs program. But that was because I heard word of mouth, not because AFCC, the Public Assistance Office, wasn't there to help me. And it would help, and so that is, they would go after the deadbeat parents. I had 3 girls to support by myself. Thank you for your time.
We thank you for coming. I know this is very, very, very difficult, and we agree with what you're saying, and that's the things we're trying to do. Promoting workfare jobs, making it easier, and encouraging everyone to continue their education, both learning and job training. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Senator Schultz would like to ask you something, Nancy.
Nancy,
can I have
the
Phillips.
The father's, right now is a drug and alcohol addict.
Yeah.
No, he's not. No, it's another problem. He's been picked up twice for a DWI, and they won't make him go into treatment. He's involved in his out, and to my knowledge, he hasn't complied with their standards either.
That works, man.
No.
His honor should be served by dividends.
That's the only thing that they're doing. Two people in the audience who need to be discussed.
to come to work, and it's somewhat difficult to work your plan. I also know that what we need to do is to make a great reality is to look at what is going to take place when we cut anything. I'm blessed to have a job, be a homeowner, retired military, but a lot of people are not blessed like myself. There was a time when unskilled high school graduates could go in the military. Military had made a big cut. They could go in the military, they could get an education, spend 4 years, also they would have employment. Another thing that I find in the community is that non-skilled, low-income jobs does not pay enough money. The benefits is better to be on welfare. Another thing that I find is going to be a major problem, when we take deadbeat dads, take everything they got, they won't work. They would rather sell drugs. The fact of it is that no man is going to go to work come Friday, he don't have the money. I'm a taxpayer, and I would love to have a tax break, but not at the expense of hunger insurance. Because hunger really don't have no color. Job skills is a major problem. Maybe our education system needs reconstruction to allow skill training in the last 4 years or the last 3 years, that they do half day in school and half day on a skill training job. For those who won't be able to go to college, we've used that in Montgomery, Alabama for years. There's a lot of people who are not, it's not even apt to go to college. But we owe young people education, and we owe them an opportunity to have a skill that they'll call for college education. If anybody needs a dividend check, it is the person who is on welfare. Most people who are on welfare that I found is that they are there because there is no job. And I just noticed the other day from listening to Wisconsin, one of the problems they found was is when they made the cut, they didn't realize what the economy was going to be about, and jobs are not going to be there. And so you end up putting a lot of people on the street. We're working hard to try to keep crimes off the street. But if you put a man in a fat light on the street and he can't have a place or an employment, then we need to start putting more bars at our windows and at our doors, because we're going to see a great rise in the crime rate. The reason we have houses like Covenant House, API, and all of those places is that teenagers and parents don't seem to be able to live under the same roof. And when we start talking about putting them back under the roof and giving an extra lot of money to a parent, how are we going to solve the family unit problem? We have a great family unit breakdown in America. And I think that we need to look at the low income, unskilled. It's not the only people that is on way up there. A lot of jobs at Anchorage does not pay enough money to even get a decent rent, a decent place to live in. And welfare becomes the best choice. There's no benefit on most of the jobs. Welfare at least gives a dinner and some help, food. But those are some of the major problems that when we look at it and we say, how are we going to create jobs? I think we need to be able to look at that and say, where are we looking to jobs from? What are we going to do with folks? I don't think we can take humanity and just throw them away, because they have become a problem. Then we need to realize that for the last 30 years, we made this problem. We designed this problem. And we took away the parental rights from the family. The state needs to give the parental rights to the family that it can raise its kids. We have made places where if a kid don't want to stay up under his parents, we can send him to the Southern House. That's supposed to be a cooling out place, but we have created this problem. And now we got to look at how to get a solution.
I'm Jack Cook, Assistant Pastor of Great Christian Baptist Church. I'm sure the Senate and its wisdom is more than I can consider what I'm about to say, but I appreciate you allowing me the opportunity to flatter you once again and please suffer through what I'm about to say. The problem is this. After what, 30 years of providing food, clothing, and shelter, or whoever asks, you want to take this support out of the same people's mouths whose parents, have known nothing but public assistance. What will you do with parents and children? If you want to right the wrong that you have created, and I give you by meeting government, by allowing this to go on for so long, The father must be allowed to be the head of his family again. For example, in a domestic dispute, his well-being must be considered also for the safety of the room rights back to your parents. If a man fathers a child, he should be held accountable to support that child. But if he chooses, he should have every right in raising that child. For that, there be for real training for children who have children, parents who know nothing about being parents. There should be some sort of moratorium so that fathers who are on the run because of back child support, men who are on the street dealing drugs, etc., because they know that if they work, their whole paycheck will be garnished. These men should somehow be allowed to gain their respectability back. Could they start from day one with reasonable support? Women have been exploited for too long. I believe the criminal penalties for rape should be restored to its former status. This will let aggressive males know that this society honors their women. Legalize abortion, except when the imminent death of the mother exists, which, by the way, has always been justifiable, legally, civilly, and morally, is the ultimate exploitation of women. But how many abortions are enough? A friend of my wife stated she had overheard a conversation between two young girls in a doctor's office where one of them stated she had had 12 abortions and that this young girl could not have been more than 16 years old. As the old saying goes, if they get you once, shame on them. If they get you twice, shame on you. If a woman willingly has sex with a man, they should both be equally responsible for the natural consequence of baby. If she's been violated, then she should name the perpetrator without fear of any reprisal unless she intentionally lies. Children should be accountable to their parents, and schools and government should support the parents in their efforts to nurture and support their children's well-being. Parental training and domestic policy takes some pressure off parents and eliminates further abuse and frustration. I noticed the bill, proposed bill 98, deals a lot with the permanent fund dividend test. I'd like to say as close to that. The right to participate in the permanent fund dividend program is granted to all elections. It is ludicrous to take it from the people that need it the most. Welfare recipients are not criminals, should not be treated as such. If anything, they should have.
It was like that at the town meeting as well, against their provision to deny dividends.
Able no longer to support that. Can you give us a little help? Then that
city can go next up on up to the state and say, hey, we need some more help. And then if that grows big, then the state can go to the federal level and say, hey, we need some help. Now, that's how it should, the structure was in the past. And I believe that's how it should be, because who knows better the needs of a household than the head of the household or the members of the household is what the needs are. Who knows better what the needs of the community are and what that community, or the people in that community need on a personal level than the people who are personally involved in that community.
Let me say something biblically, too, that I don't think is foreseeable in 8-5. And biblically, you could not do your whole field. You had to leave the four corners for the poor. Today, we don't have really our policies at work. There's a lot that we could do agriculturally to help relieve some of this problem. But when you look at the streets today and
Help Office of Human Services. Block grant funding cuts are affecting agencies. These agencies all look to the same outside source of funding, and funding then are all becoming competitive and a limited pool of dollars. If we're cutting benefits, regardless of need, we have a problem. I suggest that we do this on a case-by-case basis rather than broad brush, taking into account efforts made by people to work or go, but the dollars aren't adding up enough to get by. The concern with single parents, if forcing them to live with parents, how practical is that if they left to the physical or sexual abuse to begin with? In group homes, how many of these now have, quote, extra space? And who's going to pay if the youngsters have to go there? Where's the funding for that come? I urge the committee to move with caution rather than broad brush in working on these issues, who eventually will provide the safety net for those who truly need to be assisted, and how will the who's pay for those costs? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll be here till noon.
Or taking their checks, do this check away from them. I know several people on welfare that do the dividend check to buy their kids dinner clothes. And they just use it for Christmas. And I know the welfare program or the dividend program was not set up for us, for others to say who's going to give the check and who isn't. It's supposed to be for everybody. Grandparents, a lot of those people themselves
not with me until I received state assistance. On March 2nd, I received notification from the State Commission of Public Assistance that I was not eligible for emergency assistance. The reasons I was given was my bank account balance was $542.84, $42.84 more than I was allowed to have. My children were just not deprived of their father at least 50% of the time for the month of February. It did not matter that I was either in the hospital or too sick to care for them. It did not even matter that I have a court-ordered shared custody agreement with their father. And praise God, they have a father that wants to be active in their lives. I did not have to tell you I no longer have $42.84 to my name. Yes, I'm back on a schedule with my children, but I don't know how for how long because I can no longer provide for them. In a matter of 2 months, I've gone from being a proud provider to being fearful of losing my children, a roof over my head, transportation, and I have already lost most of my business. Since I was turned down, I learned that the qualifications for emergency medical assistance are the same as they are for AFDC. I ask you where the fence is in that. Someone who is applying for emergency relief is only temporarily financially impaired. I do not understand why you would want to place someone on a long-term program when with emergency assistance they can get back to work. My outrage has increased in the last few days as I recently met a woman with 3 young children who was pregnant. I said to her that her hands are awfully full, and she said, yes, I hoped, quite her youngest child, that he would be my last one. But I was recently notified by the state that I was about to lose my benefits, so I decided to get pregnant again. After that did not make me angry enough, since my story ran in the Daily News, I received 23 phone calls either directly or on my answering machine. 15 of them have been supportive. 2 of them have encouraged me that if I had stayed married to my ex-husband, that I wouldn't have to be in this situation. But 6 of them have been from people telling me that I didn't play the game, that I never should have admitted I had a bank account, that I never should have admitted that I am a professional and that I have a business and that I'm talented and that I have family and friends that aren't going to let me fall through the system. I've been outraged by that. I even had one woman tell me that she had property, but she deeded it to her mother for $1, and she plans to buy it back for $1. I have integrity, and I will not lie to go on the system for assistance. I am personally responsible. I am willing to pay back into a system that I'm taking funds away from for people that need long-term assistance. I feel somewhat guilty being here today because my kids don't have a deadbeat dad in their lives. I have professional skills, and I have friends and family that will not let me lose my dignity. I'm here today to ask you to do 3 things. Number 1, review the criteria for emergency medical relief. Number 2, when you're done reforming welfare, I'd like you to look at health care reform. I think with health care reform, we wouldn't have so many people on the welfare system. And thirdly, I'd ask that whatever you plan to come up with, please remember that this isn't only about money, but also about dignity. Thank you.
Worked AFDC, food stamps, Medicaid, and early for medical general leave assistance, and I never once saw this person come up. Is there welfare fraud? Yes, there is. The same amount of dishonest people getting welfare as there are dishonest legislators. Let me see if I got this right. The legislature has convened, you know, and could not survive on $100 a day per diem. That's about $2,000 a month. So they've raised that now to $4,500 a month in order for them to survive. That's their living expenses, not their salary. However, a welfare mother with one child living in poverty is supposed to not only be able to live on $821 a month, but she'll not take a reduction and live. Now, I'm not quite sure how this works out. I heard someone say that what these people need is they need somebody to help them budget their money. And I would suggest that maybe we need some of these people to come help the legislators budget their money. The increase in the DM this year will cost the state around $380,000. The last time there was a welfare reduction was during the Hickel-Tetmala reign, and at the same time we were reducing everyone's AFTC benefit by $12 a month, the commissioner was remodeling his office at a cost of about $300,000. We've got it backwards. We're not even addressing the welfare for the rich. We just spent $60 million in subsidized state loans that go to you folks and to everyone else who has money. None of the poor are going to get in on this subsidy. Now, thank you very much for your time, and I hope you'll throw this bill where it belongs, in the dump.
Thank you. in Alaska that one of the ETs has been doing that is, has become successful. So I guess I'm not totally hopeless. But one of the components that she has is, I believe in you. I believe in you. And that's what we need. And I also, I know that my time's up, and like I said, I'm very angry that I was told that I had 5 minutes, and I don't, and I know I can challenge you to have a few more of these meetings. I would challenge you to ask the people what we want. Send out information of your meetings and meet with them. Let that come out in the mandatory monthly report pink sheet that you will be there for us. You need to tell the truth about the availability of funds, jobs, child care, and skills training. But all of these programs we have now don't. Let me give you a for instance. I just told you I want to work. I have tried everything. I have MS, it goes in remission, etc. The state of Alaska has been very gracious to me Medicaid-wise. I have gone on, I've taken many workshops, I've been in long-term counseling, I've been in physical therapy, everything else. All things, bridges to try and build so that maybe there'll be some changes so I can go back to work and at least do something. Well, I decided that I was going to try and get in this one program that's been advertised, and I would go in and I would tell them, I want to be in this program, these are my limitations. I have MS. I have documented learning disabilities. I can't type the 30 words a minute that you have. I have an attention deficit disorder, but I do have some skills. I do have some skills. There were 70 AFDC slots. They said to me, you know what? We don't care that you can't type as many words a minute. You are motivated. That's the difference. Great. Then I heard there was a man who was in there doing testing with me, a black man. I don't know what his funding source was, but he had children, and he was there. He wanted it, too. So I went home, and I called some people, and I said, look, there's a man who has children. I'm going in by the shirt of my pants. The likelihood of these people letting me work when I do have training is very minimal. I want to go back to mom and tell him to give it that slot to this man. And I went back, and I go, how am I going to make that home? You know, you are motivated, you know, you can have it. So I'm going to do that. But the reality is I feel like I'm taking something out of my brothers and sisters back here. But also, where do you draw the line on deserving? I've done a lot of work. I do a lot of community volunteering. I do as much as I can. And I care. I care deeply. I've empowered several women to get off of welfare. I spoke to you at the place about them 2 years ago. Both of them got off welfare. One woman had no insurance. She created a dance studio. She worked. I think she's one paycheck away from being on welfare. She broke her ankle. Guess where she ended up? She has arthritis, etc. Her daughter, second generation welfare, was first. Anchorage Daily News, $1,500 a month. She's got $500 a month in student loans that she can't pay. She receives no assistance, but she's still out there. I went to occupational therapy the other day, telling my story to this woman and how it affects me. She got me to share. She said, I worked one way out of welfare. She's an occupational therapist. That's a success story. Likewise, I'm in a group for fostering self-esteem. The critical thing that needs to be addressed in any reform is having the money mandated to work on people's self-esteem. There are 5 of us in there. One of them, an ex-ARCO employee on the oil field, never on welfare, the other 4 are. They're going to college, they're providing for their children, they're doing the best that they can do. Actually, 6, the other woman works for ARCO. Another one works for ARCO. She started to cry when I was telling her about this. I have never told anybody that I worked my way out of welfare. Therein lies the shame of the system. We should be hearing the success stories. We should hear what people are doing versus what they're not doing. So, my recommendations would be a consolidation of services with people in the community becoming mentors. I just have a lot to say, and I'm not going to take up anybody else's time.
Could we have a copy
did not love the law. I talked to two mothers, both of them were new people in the system. And I thought, oh God, here we go. You know, this is exactly what people are talking to. But when you took it a step further, both of them said they wanted to work. Both of them said, I don't have child care, and my last child care provider molested my children. You know, so we really need to do a comprehensive look and stop the shaming. Instead, come from an I believe in you, and I'm here to help you help yourself.
And that's the first fair portion of our, of what we're trying to put forward, is once the empathize. Exactly what you're talking about. You've got to change the rules, so you've got to change the rules to penalize people like me who are going through the back door, and you know, you can't take away their health benefits because they make $65 a month. You know that I reported this for 8 months, and I went in there the other day because I didn't get my check, so I am responsible for this. I get so I hate to turn in my MMR. The only way I can do it is if I say I'm doing business with the state. But it becomes so shame-based, so my check is delayed. I deserve that. But when I went in there, I got to talk to my worker. She was terrific. But then she went, oh my God. It's like, I'm going to be penalized for what I've been doing. Thank you very much. I want you to help me and everybody in here get a job and have positive self-esteem and go.
Also, with Amanda, is Pam Sandrick?
Hello, I'm Pam Lutkin Sandrick, and I have a few things I wanted to say about the Senate bill. One was that there is a couple positive things in it. I think Section 28 is positive, and I think that the increase of Medicaid coverage is positive. And that's it. The rest of it, I think, really is a major punishment. And it was the poor, anyone who's disabled, elderly, blind. I think that if we just take a look at, you know, in this explanation of the bill, it says that this is to provide the opportunity and the incentive to become self-sufficient. And I think that therein lies one of the major problems with cutting welfare. You know, we're not offering anything in return for that. If we just look at AFDC families, which seems to be the program that gets the worst press, as it were, these are obviously the people who have, quote, chosen not to work. In this community, there could be conservatively 1,500 to 2,000 families on this program. And I read the paper every day, and there is like 18 or 19 jobs. There's not 2,000 jobs. There's not 800 jobs. There's not 200 jobs. There's not 100 jobs. So, you know, you've got the benefits to force people to go to work, but if there's no work, it seems to me to be something that isn't going to work. I'm the executive director of the social service agency out here, and we administer 7 different programs. We have job participants in the organization that are wonderful people that I would love to give jobs to, but there is no positions to give them. I had a clerk's position open up. I had 21 applicants, people with college education, and, you know, for one position. And the way I read this bill, it says that families on Medicare, or Medicaid, would not. This whole permanent dividend fund thing, I don't like any of this at all, cutting these to any people on assistance, because they're used for a number of the stopgap things, getting their car fixed and various different things. But what about the parent who works full-time and barely stays, equal with the poverty line, has a couple of children? Are they not going to get their, they're not going to get their permanent dividend checks either? And the way this thing is working, we have DPA now with a whole bunch of new jobs. They're supposed to do alcohol and substance abuse screening. They're going to screen for school attendance, mental and emotional support systems, whether or not the people need counseling. We've got people at DPA that work as hard as they can work from every minute that they get there until they leave, and they can't keep up with the work they have. When people quit, they don't fill the positions. You know, this bill is going to cost more money than you're going to ever save in any kind of public assistance savings.
Thank you very much, Anne. Molly
Cudlin? Can you get me a copy of Mike's
Molly here?
Bill on the
predator.
Have you seen it?
I see it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to
send it
to because
instinct, I use that for my well-being of my children and for the well-being of our needs at home. It's not free money. I don't consider it free money. I use my money well. I pay for my bills. I have a roof under my chin with my kids. My kids have a home. By cutting welfare, you're going to increase the, I mean, we're going to be the our bills will be piling. Even it's not as bad, but I still have hardship making ends meet. I have to pay electricity, water, gas, and I have other bills too. And you know, I don't have enough. I get creditors calling me. I used to work for the federal government, but I left my job because of personal reasons. But then I did good for myself by going to school, getting into the computer, getting the computer knowledge, and now I'm registered for the state. I'm hoping the state will hire me. I go to job interviews, but I'm never this nervous. I don't know what I am now. I'm not a, you know, person that comes usually in front of the public and can speak, but I'm here to help myself, and I want the state to help me get off the system. Give me a job, or help the people that need the job to get off welfare. And as for are you Linda Green?
Lida Green,
I'm sorry. Are you willing to give up your permanent fund? And if you are, then I will be willing to give up my permanent fund. But each and everybody that's behind me has every right to get the permanent will just as I am. So don't take it away. And at Christmas, I had a hardship. My case was shut off because I didn't apply to the MMR deal. As usual, they give you 10 days. If you don't, they say it's such a letter saying your case will come in another month. That's the end of the story. And I stayed off the welfare, even though I knew I qualified for it. I stayed off of it. I had hardship. I was desperately in need of food for my kids that I went to the food bank. And I don't consider, I consider that help, but then it's not for the people.
You signed under your name.
People go for food banks.
I don't know why.
Are the people that can't help themselves, but I can help myself. I can go to school and get, you know, educated for.
You can both be the same.
Go to work, and I want to go to work. And I've had a lot of job interviews with the state, but I'd like to be hired soon. I hope soon.
She and I agree. Before
April.
She's
an anchor. And I want to repeat one thing we really would like to see this bill do is encourage that very thing that you want, more opportunities and more flexibility to return people to the job market. And I appreciate
Madam Chair? Madam Chair? This is Senator Ellis in Juneau. If I can make a quick comment, please. I just wanted to note for the audience in Anchorage and the folks online around the state that they should not feel great relief that you've changed your mind on the permanent fund portion of your bill. That effort to deny dividends to people living in poverty is contained in another House bill and another Senate bill that are moving very rapidly through the process. So people should not feel like this issue is resolved. In fact, it's moving to the resolution that most of the people at all the meetings I've attended recently would disagree with, and that is to take dividends away from people living in poverty. So while it may be coming out of this bill, Madam Chair, and I congratulate you on acceding to the public's wishes, people should know it is active in two other bills that are much further along in the process toward becoming law. And Randy, by the others, you mean the 24,000 poor children and the parents?
That's correct.
And Randy, do you know the status of Pete Cott's bill in the House of Representatives? Okay, thank you. Everybody in that room thought that they were off the hook. What a 15% cut in APA and AFDC equal.
Yeah, it is. It's right in the bill. I think it gives the dollar figures.
I'm not a drug user or abuser.
bigger welfare benefit.
Yeah.
There aren't actual dollar figures.
Except for right in the AFC.
Oh, okay.
You know,
that's that.
My
kids didn't have
to
do that. I didn't have to do it. And if we need help, we need help.
There's no doing that.
No,
I know nobody here. I'll tell you, you know, a good suggestion, which I think. Probably just a lot of 70% cut to adult living assistance because that's what the phone is.
They might give you some good advice. What is she talking about? Is there a place called Claire House or Blair House? Claire House, that's for homeless women and children. It's run by Catholic Social Services. Got them a grant to double their capacity.